From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Hopefully, California's budget news wasn't overshadowed for you by all the other political events of the week, because the key words from the legislative analyst's office are reserves, billion, positive outlook. Cap Radio's Ben Adler is joining us for Capital Chat and a chance to wrap up some of the unfinished business of the week. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
So I definitely want to talk about the state budget, but I understand the monthly jobs report for California was just released. Let's begin there. What's the headline?
All right. So California added about 31,000 jobs in October, and the unemployment rate remained unchanged at 5.5%. Actually, the unemployment rate hasn't changed since July, but it is higher than it was earlier this year. It got down to as low as 5.2% in May. And what I think has been happening is that people who have been outside the workforce have decided to start looking for work again. So as they re-enter the workforce, that then tends to drive the unemployment rate up. So even though the state's been adding jobs at a fairly consistent clip of, 30,000 or so, in fact, September's 30,000 jobs gain was revised upward to 36,000, you still have the unemployment rate holding steady.
In the headline, the word non-farm is used, Ben. So give some context for why it's pointed out that these are non-farm payroll jobs.
Well, amongst other reasons, because the state tries to seasonally adjust to reflect different trends. So whether it's holiday season or anything like that. And also farm jobs are just, traditionally a different animal because they are very different kinds of jobs, than other jobs.
And with the seasonal adjustment, of course, the farming industry moves in that way, too. All right, let's go on to the state budget news and the legislative analyst's office report. I mentioned some key words. We're going to want to add the word uncertainty to that, but start with the positive outlook.
Wait, there's positive news about the state budget? So what you've got is, and I should say there is some reason to keep an eye out, because before we get to what's next, we heard from the governor's Department of Finance this week that the current budget is not bringing in as much money as projected, about $600 million short so far since the fiscal year started in July. That said, the legislative analyst's office is projecting that things are going to pick up. The economy is going to pick up, particularly in the latter half of the fiscal year, so maybe after the new year. And the LAO is projecting that over the next year and a half or so, the near term, which is relatively easy to forecast, certainly compared to years in the future, but that the state revenues are going to come in fairly well, and that the state will have $11 billion or so in reserves by mid-2018. So by the time the next fiscal year ends in mid-2018, the state will have that amount of money in reserves. Now, there are some caveats to that. And if you don't mind, Beth, I'd like to play a clip of tape from Jason Cisney with the Legislative Analyst's Office.
The state is increasingly well prepared to handle a mild recession. Assuming no changes in state or federal programs, the amount of reserves the state has built up could cover essentially all of the operating deficits that might emerge in a mild recession. But one of the things that the state's leaders have to consider is the next recession might not be so mild. And there is, of course, a lot of change happening in Washington, and that could affect the state budget positively or negatively.
There's the uncertainty, but let's go back to that $11 billion plus. Governor Brown has pushed hard and long to build up the reserve. How is that number in the arena of what he has wanted?
I think it's exactly what he wants. Now, it might have been even higher had revenues not dipped a little bit last year, or rather earlier this year. And by dipping, I should say it's not like the state brought in, a negative amount of money. It's just that the amount of money coming in wasn't quite as high as had been projected and as the state had been planning on. So they tweaked things a little, and that largely meant $2 billion less going into reserves in this budget than the governor had proposed in January. But the money's in decent shape there. The big thing to keep in mind is when Jason Cisney says this projection assumes that there are no changes in state or federal programs and spending, that assumption is just not going to hold true, not just because of the obvious reason that Donald Trump won the presidency and Republicans are going to control both houses of Congress. We're certainly going to see changes there, and we don't know what ways that's going to affect the economy. If they put forth an infrastructure funding package or some tax cuts, that certainly could have some effects on California's budget. Positively, negatively, that remains to be seen. And then, of course, you know, whatever happens with healthcare and immigration, all of those have ripple effects. But let's look at the state level. I mean, this, you know, Democrats who control the state legislature and Governor Jerry Brown have increased spending bit by bit each year, $25 billion over the last 4 years. So even if Hillary Clinton became president and things were a little more stable economically, according to what, you know, Wall Street and everyone else had thought about, this assumption of the $11 billion might not hold true regardless.
I'm just going to qualify that when you say stable, you mean predictable, because part of the unknown right now is the uncertainty of exactly what will happen financially or trickle down to the states under the Trump administration.
Yes, exactly right.
But the state news is that California could weather a mild recession, and there aren't huge qualifiers to that. If I'm a lawmaker, especially if I'm a Democrat coming in with a supermajority, I'm going to be thinking, what kind of a green light? How bright is that green light for spending?
And the thing is, I think that's going to be tempered at least a little bit from the Brown administration and its January budget proposal by let's see what happens in Washington, because there, you know, I interviewed, and I think actually the interview ran on Insight on Monday. I spoke with Kevin DeLeon, the leader of the Democratic leader of the state Senate, and he floated the idea of potentially having the state of California cover any insurance coverage gaps created by changes to the Affordable Care Act by the new administration and the Republican Congress. DeLeon acknowledged that would potentially carve a gajillion-dollar hole in the state budget. That's not quite what he said, but it would. He did mention, you know, multi-billion-dollar hole in the state budget and could affect the state's credit rating. And I think, you know, his staff may be trying to walk that back a bit. But the fact is, the decisions in D.C. could affect what happens in California. And I think Democrats in the legislature are going to be saying we need to make investments. But I think this particular budget year is going to be very slow to develop, because we're going to have to see what comes out of Washington and what kind of responses that provokes in California as a result.
Let's detour for a moment, since you brought up the Affordable Care Act, and talk about House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi from California, what her situation is right now with a challenge to her role, and the fact that she is one of those pillars in the foundation of the creation of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, she is being challenged for speaker by a Democratic congressman from Ohio, and it's not yet clear whether she's going to survive. I think she had been seen as having some decent position, and the rap on her is she's a very good tactician. But the question is she the right person to be the face of the Democratic Party, a San Francisco Democrat, given that Democrats did just fine in San Francisco, but struggled in, the Midwest states like Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin. So I think that is part of the reason for the challenge to Pelosi, and we'll see what happens.
There's a completely different power balance moving into Washington compared to the state of California, where California Assembly members, the Democrats, reclaimed a supermajority. It's probably wise to have you define that. It's not the case in the Senate yet at the moment. But add to that, Ben, the fact that two pollsters this week emphasized how different California is from the rest of the country politically.
The saying goes, as goes California, so goes the country. That has rarely been less true than it was during last week's election. Democrats continued their dominance of state government in California. They hold every statewide office, and they now hold a two-thirds supermajority in the state assembly. We had suspected this would be the case. It's now official. The AP called a race earlier this week. They'll either have 54 or 55 seats. They're leading in one other, but either way, they've got a supermajority. Over in the state Senate, it's not clear yet whether the Democrats are going to be able to come back and take a seat that they're currently trailing in. It's in Los Angeles County, and at last check, the Democratic candidate trailed by about 3,700 votes out of more than 265,000 ballots cast. So we still have a ways to go to see if they can get a supermajority in the state Senate.
Regarding the budget, then, in these battles, there's a lot about restoration of cuts versus new spending. Where might Assembly Democrats flex their muscle coming up and in thinking about that green light to go ahead with some new budget choices?
See, that's a really good question, is what kind of changes Democrats might seek to make. And I really think that you have a complete change in thinking going on right now because Donald Trump was elected president. I think everyone in Sacramento had one set of expectations of what would happen under a Hillary Clinton presidency, And the state would have moved ahead on essentially the same track that it had been moving on, being really out there on the vanguard of progressive policies, paid family leave and job-protected family leave, raising the minimum wage, tighter tobacco and gun control measures, all that, you know, got through the legislature last year, although the governor vetoed a couple of issues here and there. Now you're going to have the state having to play defense and maybe using some of the money that they would have wanted to spend on new programs to shore up cuts to existing programs that might come from the federal government. It really is too soon to say because we don't have a clear idea of what's going to happen in Washington, D.C. And so I think that's why I'm saying you're going to see a little more caution and just a slower pace of the budget. You might hear Democrats come out and call for certain priorities early next year or even early next month when the legislature convenes, the new legislature convenes. And yet I think all of it is going to be so much more subject to change.
You're listening to Capital Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler. In mentioning the Trump administration, let's talk for a moment about Michelle Rhee. She is the wife of the outgoing Sacramento mayor, Kevin Johnson, and she's being talked about as a possible candidate for Secretary of Education under the new administration. Add more to the picture of who she is and why her name is on that list, Ben.
So she has kind of been teachers union's public enemy number one, dating back to her time running the Washington, D.C. school system. And then she came out here and started this organization, Students First, that has sought to push back against the teachers unions on the policy front and to some extent at the ballot box. Although that group did not, to me, seem to have as big of an effect as some other education reform groups in California. So if she were to become Secretary of Education, that would certainly be interesting. And I think it's pretty clear that the views that she would bring to the job. What's talked about a little bit less is that President Obama has drawn some frustration from the teachers unions at some time. I mean, his Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, or his first Secretary of Education, who led the Chicago public school system, was not necessarily, you know, close with unions, and he had pushed some federal policies that unions didn't always agree with. And so I don't know how, you know, there's certainly some difference, I think, between current federal education policy and what it would be under Michelle Rhee, but it's not as huge of a gap as you might think at first glance.
Well, to complete this speculation, Trump's communications advisor hasn't confirmed whether Trump or anyone in the transition team has actually spoken to Rhee. And two other candidates mentioned for education secretary have declined, Ben Carson and Eva Moskowitz, which seems to keep her name more in the swirl of possibilities. But I haven't seen any more than that, and no comment yet from Michelle Rhee, correct?
Not that I've seen. Names are going to get tossed around left and right. And I think it's just, you know, worth keeping in mind that, you know, let's look at how the Trump campaign has gone and how the transition has gone. And there are a lot of names that get tossed around, and they do not necessarily always correspond to who gets the post in the end. So, you know, education secretary, not the most urgent appointment that Donald Trump needs to make. We heard this morning that he's named an attorney general, a CIA chief, and a national security advisor. So he's working on some of the more the higher up, if you will, cabinet posts. And then we'll see what happens from there.
All right. You're still tracking ballot counts.
Still tracking ballot counts.
Here we are with some races that are undecided. What either has or hasn't been decided, and what's going on with Prop 66?
Yeah, that's one of two statewide ballot measures that have yet to be called, and it is gaining. It got a big boost this week, and now it's up to about a 260,000 vote margin, 51.2% to 48.8%. And I guess I should say what it would do. It would expedite California's death penalty process.
And it's gaining on the yes side.
Correct. Yes. And the supporters claimed victory yesterday afternoon. They said, we're going to pull this one out. The AP at last check, and the last time I checked was 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon. The AP had yet to call Prop 66. The other statewide ballot measure that hasn't been called yet is Proposition 53, voter approval on mega projects funded by revenue bonds of $2 billion or up. That has been trailing, but that gap is narrowing slightly. It's about a 250,000 vote gap. So we'll see.
Some of these close races remind me of the Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court telling us that any one of these propositions could end up in court, especially one I would think, this is my own addition to that statement, one that takes this long to flush out and to finalize in the vote count.
Well, Prop 66, actually, the opponents have already filed a legal challenge, hoping to forestall it if it ends up holding on to its victory.
Okay. Final note, any intrigue at the Capitol, and there is a schedule that lawmakers have between now and January. What's going on there?
All right. So there has been talk for the last couple months of maybe the longest of long shots pulling together a transportation funding deal between the election and the end of this month when the current legislature adjourns November 30th at midnight. That seems to be the chances that seem to be really starting to disappear. And yesterday we seemed to hear more and more folks start to say, we really don't think this is going to happen now. It still could. I know we thought that, you know, a big climate change bill at the Capitol wasn't going to get through earlier this year. And a couple weeks later, it got through. So who knows? But there are some barriers. And one is that a lot of the lawmakers, including both legislative leaders, are out of town, out of the country, really. And then you've got the Proposition 54, the three-day in print rule, is now in effect because voters approved it earlier this month. So any deal needs to be in print before November 30th. It's not like you could bring it up at the last second and get a vote on it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Democrats, you know, control the legislature right now, but they don't have two-thirds in either chamber with the existing legislature. And it's no guarantee that having a supermajority would make it any easier, by the way. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, we won't talk to you next week for CapChat because of the Thanksgiving holiday, and I'll wish a good holiday to you and your family. But there will be plenty to follow up on when December begins.
Absolutely. Thanks, Beth, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thanks a lot, Ben. That is Capital Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler. You can find much more state government news on our website, capradio.org. Coming up, you will hear more about the Squaw Valley expansion project that got a green light this week. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio.